Welcome to Wrestling with Heart, a podcast looking at pro wrestlers giving back to their community. Join me, Stanley Carr, as I interview wrestling's hottest names who use their platforms as entertainers to raise awareness and do community service.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Wrestling with Heart. This is the show where we talk with professional wrestlers and professional wrestling personalities about their lives in and outside of the ring, as well as doing acts of charity work, community service, volunteering, and just spreading positivity. We're always about the positive vibes here on the show. And I've got a very special guest with me today. He has worked for a multitude of companies and has a very unique story he'll share with us today on the podcast. I'm pleased to welcome the one and only Tommy Barrett Jr., a.k.a. Tommy Angel. Welcome to Wrestling with Heart, Tommy.
Thank you, Stanley. I appreciate it.
That's my pleasure. So tell me about your upbringing and childhood. Where are you from?
Well, I was the son of a Marine Corps officer, so a military brat. I'm one of five children. I was born in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, but we quickly moved around. My father being the Marine Corps, we moved about every 3 or 4 years. So we went from North Carolina to California to the Philippines, back to Virginia, up in and around Virginia until I was in high school. My parents are originally from Massachusetts, but I finished high school in Northern Virginia. My father and I never had a good relationship. He was an alcoholic because of Vietnam. So I joined the Army in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. So at 17, you have to have your parents' permission. They sign you in. So I went into immediately after high school, basic training, airborne school. And next thing I know is at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, the 82nd Airborne Division, 4 years, just jumping out of planes and blowing stuff up and shooting all kinds of weapons.
Wow. That's just that's a rough upbringing. You know, when you go around from city to city, especially going around the world in a place like the Philippines, you get to see a different culture, different lifestyle. It's hard, it sounds like.
It was, but looking back, it made me understand that I adjust well in new situations because I had to make new friends everywhere I went, new schools, new friends. So I'm very comfortable in new settings. So me and my siblings all feel the same way. So it's kind of cool looking back now. But when you're a kid, you start making friends. Oh, we got to move again. But when I was in the military, I started really training. And I met some guys that were really buffed up. We'd watch wrestling on the weekends. I'm like, man, that seemed like it'd be a cool job. That was back when the world-class wrestling was really big. So we were watching that. And Kerry Von Erich was the guy I wanted to emulate. I was like, man, that guy's got it all. He's got looks. He's got a body. So we really started training hard, and these guys introduced me to steroids, and that's when I seen a big difference in my growth. And when I got at the end of my 4 years, I had to make a decision to want to reenlist, because all along I wanted to go to what was called warrant officer school. It's when you become a helicopter pilot, but they were saying the first thing you're going to do is if you reenlist, you have to drop weight, because some of these helicopters, you got to be maximum weight is this. I'm like, oh man, that's, I don't want to do that. So I ultimately decided to get out of the military, and I hung around Fort Bragg, Fayetteville, and we used to go down to Cumberland County Arena there in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and watch the matches. They were like, we got to find out how you get in this business. We'd bug them. They'd come out, you know, hang out outside the dressing room doors. And finally, Don Canoodle and a guy named Gene Legan, one of the big-time wrestlers back then too, smartened us up that Nelson Royal and Gene Anderson were going to open up a school in Charlotte, North Carolina. So it took about 3 or 4 months, but we found out how to get a hold of them. So we had to pay a tryout fee, which was like about $400. We went one Saturday and drove all the way into Mooresville, North Carolina, where Nelson lived, and went through this kind of just rigorous tryout. You know, he had a ranch. So it was a big hilly area with a lot of pastures. So we're running down hills, carrying guys on our back, and, you know, it's hot. But I just got out of the military, so I'm in the best shape of my life. So I'm thinking, this ain't so bad. Then we had to go in the ring and wrestle Italian Stallion. He's trying to shoot on everybody, see what you knew. And he was getting mad. He couldn't pin me because I was already just jacked up, and just I wouldn't let him pin me. But after about 2 hours of that, they separated the guys and said, all right, here we go. We're going to tell you who's in the class. And thankfully, I made the first cut, the first class. So there's like eight of us. And after about 4 months of training with Nelson, we were able to get on TV. And the cool thing about all that, no one ever really knew, is that Crockett Promotions wanted to create a school for underneath talent because their TV ratings were down. So they want to get a group of guys, the Young Lions, where they nicknamed us, and to be able to go on television and be competitive, because they were just doing squash jobs on television. Top talent come out, beat the guys up. Their eyes, like, people like, I don't want to watch that. I knew who's going to win. So they gave us a chance to look like we were going to have a chance and grow in the business. And to be a member of that first class is just really cool, because we kind of earned respect from there.
Yeah, it definitely seems like coming from an intense environment like working for the military, being in the military, it seems like it prepares you for life in the ring, because it takes that same kind of discipline and drive.
Definitely does. And you just that mindset, you know, nothing's going to stop me. So that was pretty cool. But it was hard to believe within a short period of time, we're on national television. I called my buddies back there on base and said, we got TV tonight. You're lying. I said, swear to God, watch the Superstation on TBS. And my first match was a singles match with Baron Von Raschke, and that same TV tape. And I had the Rock and Roll Express on the second one.
Oh, nice. Well, you got to bump into several people over the course of your career, worked with so many legends. When you get to TV and you see some of these names, any pieces of advice kind of on the way in that they wanted to get, that they gave you, that kind of stuck with you throughout your career?
Well, just the biggest thing is that we were taught by Nelson and Gene. The cool thing was Nelson was a babyface and Gene was a heel. So we got this, understand the psychology of the business, good versus evil. But the biggest thing they stressed on us is don't hurt anybody. You know, you're out there trying to, you know, make this look intense and real, but don't hurt them. If you hurt somebody, you're not going to get booked. So there's an understanding, respect, that you don't want to take away the guy's living. So just going out there and be a student of the business, you know, keep your mouth shut and listen and observe everything. So we did a lot of that. And we knew our role. We embraced it. We were the underneath talent. But we all had aspirations of being marquee guys. And some of us got more opportunities than others, but we never quite made it to that, you know, the main event stuff.
It's always about working with your partner to make sure that they know what to do in cases that things kind of don't go over as well as they need to be. But you seem like you had that. You were able to do that and go through all that stuff. So that's great.
Yeah, it's just understanding, though, they'd always tell you beforehand, you know, here's the finish. You're going to go about 5-10 minutes, you know, and after working with all these different talents, you understood the way they worked, and it's that give and take, and, you know, there are mistakes, people get hurt. I had my nose broken 7 times.
Wow.
But it just kind of makes the more believable, you know, you get to see the blood or the black eyes. I mean, it's all part of it. And being on the road as often as you are, most people don't. They say, oh, it's the wrestling business, it's all entertainment, but it's your professional athletes, because you have to go day in and day out. You have to, you know, take care of your body. You got to work through injuries. If you're hurt, you can't work. You don't work, you don't make money. Someone will take your spot. So you're just
a lot
managing
of sacrifice.
All that. Yep, yep.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do to move up the ladder. And you made your debut in the, I believe it was the mid-80s. Is that right?
Early 1986.
So you make your debut after training. I'd imagine you were probably nervous starting out. A lot of people
gosh,
that I've
yeah,
talked
you know,
to.
All the guys, were in a dressing room with all the guys you see on TV. Dusty Rhodes was the booker. Magnum T.A., the Four Horsemen, Ric Flair. They're all sitting around in chairs. Road Warriors, Nikita Koloff, all those guys, and you're just starstruck and like, oh my God, I'm this is real, I'm here. And they're like, okay, kid, you're up in about 5 minutes, go over here, and they'll tell you when to go in the ring. And even though it was Techwood Drive, was a small television studio that Turner had, and but there was probably about 40 people with pipe and drape, but you know, the big old cameras there, Tony Schiavone's at the desk, and you walk out and you're just like, ah, this is real.
Yeah, it's like this is like the studio days where everything was like in the ring was in the center. You got the crowd going. This was before like the big arenas with the get up that you see nowadays. It's a whole nother world.
Yeah, well, those were the studio tapings that were on Superstation, but we'd do televisions in and around the Carolinas. We did Raleigh, North Carolina, Greensboro, North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, Rock Hill, South Carolina, Spartanburg, Columbia, South Carolina. So we did the circuit all the time doing TV, and all the small towns around there were all the house shows. So we'd be the beginning card matches, but, you know, just always involved, always traveling around the North and South Carolina, and all the hard TVs, the Superstation was all in this that little small Techwood Drive, what you call it, I guess a studio taping, but, you know, that was a staple back then. It was 6:05 and 7:05 on the Superstation, you watch wrestling.
Who were like some of your favorite opponents to work with over the years?
I think definitely Kurt Hennig. He was a good friend, and he always took care of me. He always wanted to give me a chance to show my talent on television, so he would give me a little bit more. And that was the whole thing with guys at our level. You have to earn their trust, because if you get the nickname, a good hand, that means they trusted you. You go out there and you do some more things. Kurt Hennig was good. Barry Windham was another outstanding guy. Steve Austin, you know, they're excellent, excellent men in general, outside the business, but they let you have opportunities. Terry Taylor was another one. I had the Undertaker's first match on television when I introduced him to WWF.
Really?
And then I also did, me and a friend of mine, I broke into business with Arn and Tully, came up to WWF, their first tag team match. They paired us up with me and a guy named Bob Emery, and they were very happy because they already knew they worked with us. And they're like, Hey guys, you know, this is our first time. It was just five or six great tag teams up here, the Rougeos, British Bulldogs. We want to make a good impression. We're going to have to mow you down. I said, that's what we're here for. So we went out there and had a great time, and they were really pleased.
Wow, that's unbelievable. You got to work with all those people. You mentioned The Undertaker working his first match in the WWE. What was he like to be around?
He's a really, really great guy, Mark Callis. Super agile. I mean, this was before he had all his tattoos, but if just the matches on YouTube, but he can walk around the ring on the ropes like a cat and balance himself. But that was part of his gimmick. He climbed the top rope. He told me what he was going to do. He had my hand and walked around, and he came off and just thunder punched me on the head. But just super athletic, super humble, just a great guy. He's a Christian as well.
What was it that led you to leave the business?
That was in the 94 when, the business was trending down as far as its popularity. My hairline was going way back. And that same early in 94, my father committed suicide. And I was just in a bad place. And I just decided I was going to leave the business. I was 31 years old. So I called both offices and said, look, you know, I appreciate all the opportunity, but I'm done. You know, it was underwhelming. And they said, you sure? I said, absolutely. Because I wasn't anybody big name. So they say, well, we appreciate all the work you've done. And that was it. And then so for about 8 months, I was trying to figure out what I would do with my life. And they just happened to be a local broadcast school in Charlotte where I was living. So I got on that. And it was almost the same way as the wrestling. It was like about a four-month school. You know, it was a technical school. You learned equipment, techniques. The biggest thing the school promised was networking with the local radio stations. Once you get to the school and you graduate, we'll get you plugged into the community. I thought, well, that's cool. And then they were, what format you really looking at? I'm like, I'm classic rock. Cause I was 30, almost 32 at then. And all the kids were like, you know, 19, 20. They want to do hot AC or, you know, top 40, whatever, different stuff, hip hop. And they're like, well, we never had any success with this station. I was like, that's where I want to go. And they're like, okay, well, we'll do our best. And I was bouncing to make money on the weekends. And it was a live venue, a lot of live rock acts. And the radio station I like was doing a promotion there, broadcast. They all come in the front door. And they're like, oh, it's a radio station. I'm like, that's cool. You got to stand over here. I'll get to you in a second. They're like, you don't know. I'm like, wait a second. So after I got them over, I went over and said, who's in charge? Who's the boss? And they told him, they pointed at him. I said, hey, man, I'm in broadcast school. I want to be an intern. Can you give me an internship? He goes, what makes you think you can do it? I said, dude, just give me a chance. And he gave me his business card, program director, and called him on Monday. He didn't remember. I said, dude, I was the one at the bouncer. Oh, yeah, you're that big SOB. Come on down this day, and I'll talk to you. The only reason he agreed to be an intern, he goes, because I was so big, he's like, man, I could take you on remotes and nobody would bother me. But I ended up working there 400 hours of intern stuff, you know, doing remotes and, you know, all the food they bring to remotes, I'd squirrel away some so I could have something to eat. But I became their field operations director, which you go out and set up all the live broadcasts. Then I became the promotions director and eventually an on-air jock. And the same way I forced got my way into the wrestling business at the exact best time with the best talent, the same thing in radio. The station I was at was WRFX, and the morning show was John Boy and Billy, and they had 138 affiliates. They were a flamethrower. Wow. And I was like, and everybody's like, how did you get this radio school? It was like the broadcast school. I was like, how did you get there? I said, man, I just went up to the program director and said, I want your business card. I want an internship. So ended up working there about 15 years. I met my wife there. And then when we were pregnant with our son, the business was trending down about the same time. And the kid they hired to be my boss was making a lot less money than me. And I was like, I could see the writing on the wall. So I left there and went to work for a nonprofit, Big Brothers Big Sisters, which is a mentoring organization. Went down, filled out the application, did all the paperwork, and they said, we're going to match you with a child based on the same interests. And so they had a meeting set with this little boy named Michael. He was 8 years old, and his big thing was he liked art, and I did too. And so they matched him, and he looked like my son. He was, you know, little redheaded kid with freckles. And he sat down, but I started mentoring him. And, today he's probably, I think he's 30, 31 years old, but it was the neatest experience for me because it gave me an idea of what it was like to be responsible for a younger person. So it's looking at it from a vantage point of one day I'll be a dad. You know, how do you raise a kid? And Michael's story is heartbreaking. He was 6 years old, hanging out with his dad playing golf, and his mom took his twin sister shopping. They came back from a golf course, and Michael's hanging out with his dad. His dad suddenly died of a heart attack, and poor Michael was home with him all alone. So he was unpacking all the feelings and trauma he had with that, and just building a relationship with that boy, strength to my understanding of what true love and compassion looks like. And we became like best buddies. I was able to take him down to radio station. He was my best man at my wedding, and I taught him how to drive. And we speak periodically on his birthday, but I would love to see him because I'm used to hearing his little Michael voice, like, hey, Tommy, too. Hey, Tom, how you doing? I'm like, oh, man, you're a man. That's crazy.
And you watched him grow up, so it's unbelievable. You just never know what kind of impact you're going to make in someone's life.
Yeah, he struggled in elementary school with math and reading. We popcorn read all the Harry Potter books. And he ended up going to Appalachian State and became graduated in some kind of computer design or something. He's got a really good job now. I mean, he's just blow the charts off as far as being successful and single.
Wow. What is it about helping out in the community that gives you joy?
Well, I mean, this as a Christian, I understand that we're supposed to give back. We're supposed to leave this world a little better than we found it. And Big Brothers, Big Sisters, the model is 1 hour a week can change a child's life. And if you can do that, there was a saying that they had in Big Brothers, Big Sisters was to share your knowledge with a child is to achieve immortality. So you're giving them what you've learned, and it'll help them grow and sustain in life. So that's your legacy. And then as a Christian, you know, I'm now involved in church, and one of my mentor in wrestling was Nikita Koloff. He got out of the business in late 93. I got out early 94, but I watched him go through the death of his first wife from Hodgkin's lymphoma. And that's when he decided that, you know, he's following Jesus Christ and get out and pursue ministry. And he helped me through a lot too. I got married in 2004. My wife and I, our daughter had passed away. That was a really, really rough time. I'd lost my job. You know, we had to file bankruptcy. We had to short sell our home. Here we are trying to still figure out to grieve the loss of our daughter and welcome a new boy, our son, into the world. And he got me connected with this with the men's event. It was 5 days long called The Quest. And I went to that, and it transformed and changed my life. And I was like, this is amazing. This is all I want to do is to, you know, share the gospel with everybody I can, especially men, you know, because men, we're very good at wearing masks and pretending everything's all right. I'm good. It's okay. But him and Lex Luger's testimony is really powerful. He's now in ministry, and him and Nikita have a man camp down in Royston, Georgia, twice a year. So as an alumni, I've gone to that too. Go down to Georgia. They do a 5-day. It's the same model. Five days. Men go down there. It's a 100-acre ranch. So they go out in the wilderness. They do a lot of biblical study, a lot of prayer, a lot of fasting. And on the Thursday of that week, all the alumni go down to Georgia, the can, and we serve dinner to these men, and just, you know, and because they graduated on Friday, but to see the joy on their faces after they've gone through this journey of trying to figure out who they are, their identity in Christ, and it's absolutely amazing. So mancamp.info is where Nikita and Lex's website is, and it shows the dates, and it talks about mind, soul, and body. You know, the three things that you need for biblical manhood. I'm involved in my church now. I've been on their leadership team there for about 8 years. And it's the same thing as just teaching men how to be good husbands, good dads, you know, be good citizens in the community, and to give hope. Because, you know, honestly, right now, this time in our world, not a lot of hope.
No, no. But you got to find some reason to be optimistic. Otherwise, you're missing out. What is life without being positive? And that's something I wanted to do with Wrestling with Heart, was to spread positivity, especially in the wrestling community. And so I hope that somebody that's listening to this or watching this can take something from this and can be inspired to do something for someone else. Tommy, I just want to say thank you very much for coming on to the show. It means a lot to me and to my listeners and viewers that are watching this on YouTube. Where can people find you on social media, or if they want to get in touch with you, where can people find more about you?
I'm just low-key. I'm on Facebook at Tommy Barrett, B-A-R-R-E-T-T, my given name, and that's where you can find me. I'm 60 years old. I'm just enjoying life. I got my son is 17 now. He's our life, me and my wife. He's 6'2", 350 pounds, but he will not be going into the wrestling business. I appreciate what you're doing and highlighting the good side of our business.
Thank you very much. You're more than welcome to come back.
Anytime, brother.
Yes. All right. Take care.
You too.
This is Wrestling with Heart. I hope you found this podcast to be informative and entertaining. If you did, please hit the subscribe button and look out for the next edition.